Thou art saved.
The living room's dark, save for light being cast from the big TV screen and the imminent sunrise that's teasing the one starry sky with whispers of morning.
Hey, George.
Hey, Ryan. How goes it?
It's going pretty good. I didn't realize this when we picked this game, but I just went to Disney World with my small children for the first time, and we played a Disney game.
Why would you even... No, this was done on purpose. This was entirely...
Yeah.
Just like the Halloween episode was on Halloween.
100% on purpose. And Home Alone was actually 100% on purpose. And
that was so terrible, too. So, I mean, it's like when we actually try to do something like good, it blows up in our face. But when it just we stumble our way through life, as we do, it just works out for us.
Yeah, so maybe let's stop planning and thinking about things and just leaving it up to God.
Do without doing.
Jesus, take the controller. So, oh, dude, if we ever release merchandise, that is going on a shirt.
Oh, yeah. Like, what would Jesus play?
My God. It's just so.
And we didn't plan any of this.
No,
if we
not at all.
It would be terrible.
So many Teespring campaigns. Before we jump into Toy Story, I want to mention to you, the listener, this was actually a fan request. So a listener of the show requested this game specifically. He had fond memories of it. He actually has like a little bit of a retro game collection, you know, with like the original systems and all the cool legit stuff. So he was like, yeah, I would really love it if you guys played Toy Story because it tries to do a lot of things.
And I
just really am kind of curious what you guys think about it. And I tell you all that to tell you this. If you want to make us do things, you can find us on the Twitter at NoGogPod. And then there's a little contact form on our website, nostalgiagoggles.audio. And you can just go outside your house and shout the name of a game loudly, and maybe one of us will overhear it. I'm just saying you have options.
Absolutely. No, I particularly like the shouting loudly one, because if you do that for long enough, what will happen is the police show up. And then when you're booked, mention the podcast, and then that will go into, you know, like a local crime beat, and we check those pretty religiously. So,
totally, yes. And if you are arrested in an absurd enough way, it might make national news, in which case we don't even have to comb through all those local municipalities.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the nicer way to do it. I mean, you know, but we love our fans, so we'll... We'll comb through all of the local police beats just for you guys.
If only there were an easier way to communicate with strangers. If we think of one, we'll share it. But anyway, for now, just get arrested. So we played Toy Story for the Super Nintendo, and I need to specifically point out two things about this game. One, this was made by Disney Interactive, which is relevant because a lot of movie tie-in games and Disney tie-in games and, you know, like third-party property games are made by some random game studio, right? Like they farm out their IP to, you know, Game Studio X, who makes the game. Disney Interactive is notorious for making not awesome games.
Which I remember, the only reason why I know that is because there was some buzz about this when, you know, Disney bought out LucasArts. And I'm not sure if I'm right, but I think they shut down or it had recently shut down like their gaming division. It's like, yeah, because it's like, oh, no, is Disney going to make those now? Because they're not great at making games.
Yeah, they largely gave up on video games, which I think was the right thing for Disney to do based on the handful of first party Disney games I've played, this one included. But I think it's worth noting, like, this is a Disney game made by Disney, not a Disney game that they just farmed out to whoever as a cash grab. Like, they owned this and presumably wanted it to be successful. The other thing is, when Susan asked me what game we were playing for this episode, I was like, oh, we're going to play Toy Story, actually, for the Super Nintendo. And she looked at me completely serious and said, those two things overlapped? And it was like a you want to feel old moment.
Yeah.
I was just like,
oh, no.
I was like, yes, Toy Story is so old that its movie tie-in game was on the Super Nintendo.
Yes. No, and actually, when I told Megan which one we were playing, she was like, wait, you're playing Toy Story for Super Nintendo? I was like, yes. And she was like, I played that game and I beat that game. And then so I came, yeah. And so I came walking out, you know, and she was just like, oh, are you done? And she's like, did you beat it? And I was like, no, I got frustrated. And she was like, well, maybe you should get better at video games. And I was like, oh, what are we feuding now? Like, are we doing this?
Yeah, don't hurt your back picking up that gauntlet. Jeez.
Yeah. So then eventually when it did inevitably defeat me outright, she was just kind of like, yeah, you know, maybe you should get good. And I had to actively bite my tongue to not bring up our what would be now nearly a 10-year-old Smash Brothers feud that I have with her. Because I'm like, no, that's petty. That's petty. I'm better at Smash Brothers than her, but it's petty. It's petty. It's a petty thing to do or talk about how I'm better than Smash Brothers. But that's not the point. The point is that Toy Story beat me.
Yeah, which is not unreasonable. So before we dive in proper, what are your nostalgia goggles for this game? Or do you have nostalgia goggles for this game?
None. I had not played it until you said, hey, we should play this movie tie-in game. And all of a sudden I had these horrible Nom flashbacks to Home Alone. And you're like, no, I am promised it is not that bad. And I was like, okay. And luckily it was not. But no, I was legitimately uneasy until I picked up the controller and started playing this for the first time. I had not played it prior to now.
Okay, so I am super not coming into this fresh. I definitely played this as a kid, and weirdly, as I was getting further and further into the game, relying, spoilers, entirely on the invincibility cheat,
yep.
I kind of had a moment where I said out loud to Susan, I was not so much better at platformers when I was 10 than I am right now, that I'm confident I beat this game without cheating. And yet, I have clear memories of beating this game and no clear memories of cheating at beating this game, which makes me think I only played this game while cheating. And I must have no normal memories of it.
Well, to be fair, that's pretty much my memory with Contra 3 was,
right.
You know, I was like, yeah, well, I'm going to play Contra 3 with the game cheat. Oh, no, I actually have to play this game. My stars and garters. However, will I survive? And yes, the invincibility cheat is wildly necessary because I think I put about a half an hour, maybe an hour into this game before I was like, nope, and decided to become invincible. And then I expected to walk all the way through it. But interestingly, with the way the game is built out, even nigh invulnerability does not allow you a pass, which is interesting. We can get into later. But
yeah, there are certain problems that even immunity from death apparently cannot solve. But
immunity from death and damage somehow doesn't solve all of your problems. And I think that ultimately, that it should, I don't know, but the philosophy, we'll get into philosophy 101 in part three.
It's a good life lesson, but we got to talk about these visuals because this is at the height of faux 3D on the Super Nintendo. And man, someone somewhere had a gray or a beige PC that they were absolutely pushing to the limit to render these graphics, and when this game came out the other side, they were like, this is amazing. And I didn't like this kind of faux 3D even as a kid, and it has not aged well. I mean, every game we have touched that has had this sort of weird glossy fake 3D-ness, I've felt this way. I'm just like, oh God, it looked horrible when I was 10 and it looks even more horrible in my 30s.
Yes. I mean, it's it's weird because I think that one of the things that Toy Story has been applauded for, and I agree with, which is that, you know, at the beginning of 3D animation, they were like, okay, well, everything looks like it's made out of plastic, you know? So what do we do? Well, what if we made a movie? What if we played to that limitation, right? And then they made, and then they're like, and let's just get a really good story behind it. And then they made a classic that's last forever, you know? This was not that with the visuals. I mean, it was just like the visuals. So, okay, so the actual visuals and surface of the visuals, they were, yeah, you know, they just weren't. They weren't like accosting, in my opinion, you know, but they weren't good. They were just like you said, they were very plasticky, but not like in a tolerable way.
Well,
you know?
The problem with the faux 3D is that it still has incredibly hard edges. Mm-hmm. And so because shading isn't really done as well at this time, and it was even worse on the faux 3D textures, what you end up with is these very jagged lines between everything, between a character and the environment, between two characters, between any two things. There's just this incredibly sharp disconnect visually where you're like, is he standing on that shelf? Am I hanging from that chain? Are we in the same plane of existence? Like, there's just this massive disconnect from these unbelievably saturated colors and unbelievably jagged stair-step lines that just, to me, is incredibly jarring and hard to not focus on. It's the painted wall with a single dot problem. And it's not that, oh, the graphics were amazing, except for this one thing. The graphics are terrible kind of across the board, but I can't unfocus my eyes from it. And to the point where there were actually things happening on screen where I was like, oh, I need to be taking like a player action, like, but I'm actually just spellbound by how terrible that looks. and like I would get hit. I was like, oh, thank God I'm invincible, because that enemy's superpower was lulling me into confusion.
No, like, so for me, I kind of like mentally lobbed that in under like visuals in service of gameplay, in which case they, in my opinion, they fall flat in almost every way possible. And yeah, so to speak to what you're saying, where like you have no idea what you can and cannot interact with, you know, and that got really old really fast, you know, because basically right off the top, there's a toy that's moving, that the little choo-choo train, and that hurts you, yep. Right? Now then immediately there is another toy, Mr. Potato Head, and he does not hurt you, you know, and I'm like, oh, okay, so not everything that's moving hurts me, just a lot of what's moving hurts me. And so then, you know, and it's just impossible to tell what you are and are, what is and is not in your plane, you know? So like in a platformer, that is super freaking important to know what platforms you can jump on.
Yeah.
You know? And so that got really frustrating, especially with the dressers, you know? Like,
yes. Yeah, because there's virtually nothing in the game you can walk in front of, but there's tons of stuff that the enemies and other good guys that you're trying to help, like the other toys, can walk in front and behind of those things.
Right.
So, like, you'll be walking alongside, like, Rex, and Rex will pass right under a desk chair, and you face plant into it. And you, yep, can't duck under it, you can't crawl, you can't jump over it. You have to, like, find the platforming route around a chair with thin metal legs that a dinosaur was just able to casually stroll under. Like, it's it's not just visually frustrating when you're by yourself, but then the game feeds you additional information that additionally conflicts with your observed behavior. And you're like, well, he's like four times my size and he just fit through there. Like, it's no big deal.
Right. Like, NBD. But, and also too, what you hit on that was something else that just frustrated the ever loving mess out of me, which is that to me, I felt it was very unclear, like, the gradation of, like, things I could and could not jump onto, you know?
Yes! Yes! Yeah.
like basically, like, your jump height compared to the jump, like, the platforms in the world, like, they put a platform that is above something that you can jump onto, but only by, like, the spurs on your boots, you know? So it super feels like you should be able to jump onto that. And despite, like, playing it for hours, like, I could not get out of the habit of just trying to directly jump onto it and then being like...
Yes, and feeling incredibly frustrated because you're like, oh, I really thought that's what they wanted me to do. And you can tell from a level design perspective that they put these larger obstacles there so that there's only one obvious path. But mm-hmm. it's only obvious in the abstract sense of you don't have five different routes to choose from, but it looks like you have five different routes to choose from, and you end up trying to jump onto the little shelf or onto the little dresser or onto the little, you know, bucket sure. or whatever, and you just can't. And it's not nearly by enough visually to be obvious. It should be by friggin' two times your height. It needs to be way, way the hell more obvious.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, even if they had just decreased your jump by, like, 30%, your jump height, it would have changed nothing mechanically about the game, because they never put anything in that range that you can jump onto. And it'd be very clear, like, oh, I can jump up to my waist equivalent, so that means I can jump on these things, you know? And then you'd have a good feel for it. Oh, and this is a perfect example of, and we've talked about it a number of times, and if nothing else, I'm happy that we saw it, because this gives us a counter example. This is what it looks like when you don't have stuff like coyote physics, you know?
Yes.
This is a perfect example of it, because the thing is when you don't have that extra little give that where you probably shouldn't have been able to jump onto that thing, but you get to jump onto it anyways, it's super frustrating, you know? If they just gave it to you, then you'd be like, oh, all right, you're like, oh, it would feel good. You'd be like, oh yeah, I just barely made that jump, you know? But instead you just always just barely don't. And
or create platforms that you obviously cannot jump onto.
Right. Yeah. Right? Either the platform needs to be 30% higher or your jump needs to be 30% less.
Yeah.
But stop putting me right on the hairy edge and I always get to fail. Like it's insanity.
It's possible that and this is I'm wildly gonna speculate here to try and give the designers a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, but it's possible that they tried to make up the world of as few things as possible so that it's like, oh, well, you can't jump all the way up onto this drawer, but near the drawer, there will always be like a low platform that you can jump onto, and then from there, you can jump onto the drawer.
Right.
But what ends up happening is you associate the drawer with a thing you can jump on top of. And so every time you see the drawer, you're like, oh, well, I'll just jump up there, and nope, I guess I need to walk two or three screens back over and find a low platform. There it is, platform up onto the drawer. And so, like, the problem is always obviously solvable, but every single time it came up, I felt basically tricked or fooled again, where I was like,
right.
Oh, I know I can't jump onto this thing, but it sure looks like I can, and so I'm gonna keep trying it. And then you just feel like a freaking idiot every single time. And a thing that I think compounds this problem is... you are basically so close to Woody in the camera that if he had nose hairs, you could count them. Like, you are right up on him. He is a giant that takes
37.
37 nose hairs. little 37 little splinters. But I mean, you're right up on him in the camera. He takes up like a huge portion of the screen, and the obstacles and platforms are all things like furniture. They're huge. I mean, they're way, way bigger than he is. They're shelves and furniture and you know, chairs and desks and things. So those always take up way more than the screen, and you can only see a little section of them. So when you move, things are coming on and off the screen constantly, which mm-hmm. means when you're standing next to a drawer that you do have to cross to progress, mm-hmm. there's a really good chance you actually need to back up 10 feet so that you can see the shelf, the low shelf you have to jump onto to make it on top of the drawer. But when you're standing next to the drawer that it looks like you can jump onto, but you totally can't, you can't right. see the thing on the screen that you need to progress forward. So there's just, and I, that's why I feel like they kept fooling me, because I would progress, hit a brick wall, and then try and jump over the brick wall and be like, right. oh, wait, I can't. But if, oh, if there was always a visible thing, I'd be like, oh, I need to do whatever to get up there. But it,
yeah, and it double back and speaks to the saturation problem that you're talking about, which is that when you super saturate everything, it makes it very, very difficult to call anything out. It makes it difficult to create any visual affordances. So, like, let's juxtapose this to a game like Super Mario Brothers, where we had mentioned that anything that is in the foreground, anything that can be interacted with, is more colorful and has multiple colors. It draws your eye to it. Anything that's in the background is, you know, like bland, single colored, flat, right? Now, well, you certainly can't get away with something like that, like that, quite like that for, you know, the Super Nintendo. Super Mario World, again, does very similar things because it works. But this, when everything is hyper colorized, you know, like when I look at the screen, I'm just like, okay, what can I and can I not, what is a platform, you know? And then, like you said, like you're like, you start to recognize, oh, well, I can jump onto these bookshelves. And I think you're absolutely right, is your brain just recognizes that as like a surface you can climb onto, that coupled with you also have an approximate mental recollection of your jump height. And so then you're just kind of like, yeah, I can jump on that. And then it's like, no, I can't. And if, and you know, even if, like, let's just say they had toned everything down so everything wasn't on LSD colorful, right? Then, you know, like, you would walk by one of the little tennis balls that you need to use in order to jump onto the shelf. If that was like a little bit more colorful or had multiple colors or a different color palette or whatever, then that would call it out to you. So you would stop and you'd say, oh, hey, it's one of those balls I can jump onto. I probably should jump on it, you know?
Yeah. And a lot of this is exacerbated by the hitbox. And by hitbox, yes. I mean, if there is an enemy anywhere on the screen, you take damage and then you die and you just die.
You just die. Yeah. I mean, to say like a hitbox is like, it's more like they took a hitbox, loaded it into a shotgun, fired it about the room, and then picked that up and then tried to piece it back together over several years and generations of people trying to put it together. You know?
I kind of get the impression that someone mixed up the measurements for Woody with the measurements for the screen. And they were like, oh, so if any enemy crosses into this area, then Woody will take damage. Okay, I'll just type up that code, click, click, clack, and then no one ever went back to them and was like, I feel like Woody gets hit a lot. Like, should the world be so violent and hostile toward our cowboy hero? Because that doesn't feel quite right. Like, but they just brushed that right off.
But the entire time, like, the person saying that, you know, they're like, you know, I'm not sure that the world should be like, all of a sudden you just hear in the background, ship it.
Who is it at the time? Was it Bob Iger back then? Just like whoever was in charge of Disney at the time was just like, yeah, every minute you're talking about this, kids are not buying it.
Yep. So ship it now.
Ship. Yeah, it's one of those things where I feel like playtesting is a big part of what allows a game like this to get to market. Mm-hmm. Because if you have a wide variety of players test your game, experienced people, inexperienced people, you know, critics, regular folks, and you have someone say, this feels super hard. Like, everywhere I go and everything I do, I'm constantly getting hit because I'm a giant who takes up 80% of the screen. And the second an enemy comes onto the screen, they come into contact with me and I take damage. And then after five hits, I'm dead. And like, people would then take that feedback and be like, oh, hey, maybe we shouldn't make you die constantly and then only have a few lives and start with no continues. Like, it seems disproportionately hard for a Disney game, and so much of what's hard about it is just the huge, massive hitbox. Like, Woody is way too big, and his hitbox is way too sloppy. Like, any time an enemy or projectile comes onto the screen, there's a really good chance it's going to hit you.
Well, and interestingly, while we're on hitboxes, I think that the hitbox for your whip is way too small. You know,
is there a hitbox for the whip? Because it really just felt like somebody rolled like a D20, and if you rolled 15 20s in a row, then your whip would connect, and otherwise you just die.
So in order to hit with your whip, it's only crits, and you have to confirm the threat, you know, so you have to roll a crit, right? And then you have to, but it's not a crit, it's a threat. And then you have to roll again and hit again to actually crit. Yeah, that feels more right.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Is it the, like, I would just sometimes whip at something, you know, whip it good. Like, I would whip at it like 3-4 times before it finally registered the hit. And also, and this delves a little bit in the gameplay, but while I'm just complaining about it, the fact that your whip angle changes if you're jumping or standing is fucking maddening. It is not okay, dude. Like, because basically I'll be whipping at something and I'll be like, oh, okay, well, I can't hit it. So, but if I jump a little bit, then I'll totally be able to hit it. So then I jump and then I'll just whip right over it. Like, it's just kind of like, oh my God. That coupled with the fact that when I'm finally like, yeah, I hit it. I may have taken 20 times, five rounds at 3 attacks per round, and I whiffed every one except that one, but I finally got it. And it was like, huh? No, you no. Silly goose.
Well, and this is part of what's so frustrating about the hitbox is, similar to coyote physics, if you're going to have an aggressive hitbox, it should be in the player's favor. And if you're going to have a minimized hitbox, it should be in the player's favor. But they've done literally the opposite. And the place that it was most egregious to me was with the claw boss. Did you make it that far?
No, I did actually. Eventually, I got... How far did I get? I got... close to that, because I eventually just got frustrated to the point where I was like, no, and I just watched the YouTube video, because I got past the racing despite like my eyeball clawing out experience with the racing segment, but no, I didn't quite get to the Wolfenstein-esque
we're gonna talk about that. So the boss you fight right after that is Sid trying to get Buzz out of the toy machine with the claw.
Mm-hmm.
And it's normal side scroller again. But the way you fight that boss is, there's, you know, the little green aliens everywhere, because you're inside the claw machine now. And you whip them once and they go up into the air, and then you whip them again and they fly up and hit the claw. And
oh,
that makes
God.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's the thing. The hitbox for whipping them the second time is mm-hmm. so aggressively against the player that I actually had to stop and go look at a YouTube video to make sure that the thing I was trying to do was actually possible at all. And you have like a split second when they're at the very, you know, because you hit them and they like fly up and then sort of fly back down like in a straight line. And you have just a half second when they're at the pinnacle of that arc to hit them and make them fly off at an angle and interact with the claw. Because even if the claw crosses into their space when they're just doing the small up and down, it does not matter. It doesn't count. They have to be on like the big arc. So I was just like, I'm positive that this is what I have to do, but I need to, like someone seeing Tony Hawk do a 900 for the first time, I was like, I need to see someone else do this so that I know I'm not mad.
Well, and that, so I'm actually a little happy now and a little vindicated, because if I remember correctly, at one point we were talking, I believe it was during the Super Mario podcast, but we spoke briefly on the fact that when Super Mario does make an error, it makes it in the player's favor. And we said, what would a game even look like if it always made it against the player? And I said it would fit really well into a Cthulhu mythos, one where the player themselves thought they were slowly developing madness. And yeah, apparently, because literally you remembered how to do this, and yet you thought you were going mad to the point where you sought out peer review in order to claim sanity.
Yeah, Yeah, first off, amazing throwback right there. Truly, truly excellent work, because I do remember you saying that. And yes, you are 100% correct that I fought him and I died, because all you have to do to die is he drags Buzz off screen.
Right.
So it's like you can take damage or Buzz can go off screen, so you can die super fast. And so I died, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 times in a row. And I was just like, nothing. I can't whip the crane. I can't seem to whip the green guys twice. And there's nothing else that I can obviously do. And I mean, I did play this game as a kid. Like, I was like, I know I need to whip them into the crane, but it's just not happening. And I mean,
why?
And my whip animation is going right through them. Like, this is what I say, like, they have the hitboxes exactly opposite. Like, I watched the little ring on the end, because it's, you know, it's your pull cord. Like,
howdy, partner.
Exactly. There's a snake in my boot. Like, I watched that little stupid ring go through objects I was trying to whip 1,000 times over the course of this playthrough, and nothing happened. And yet, if an enemy was even loaded into the RAM for that level, I felt like I took damage.
Yes. No, it's insanely frustrating in that regard. And I think that one of the things you touched on, and I'd just like to go ahead and touch on it now, which is the fact that what you just described was what I ran into with invincibility not being a solution, right? Because normally in a platformer game, if it's like nothing can hurt you, you're like, oh, cool. So it's like taking the scenic route, you know? You're like, oh, yeah, I'm just kind of in it for the scenery. You know, it's fine. I know that I'm cheating. I'm okay with it. But then you run into so many scenarios where, so like for one of them, the second level, it's a time-based endeavor, you know? So, and it's 180 seconds, which feels like forever. And if you mess it up, then, you know, you get to start it over again. And it's just like, oh, it doesn't matter that I can't take any damage. That's only a part of it, you know? And so, yeah, with like the claw machines, like you literally never progress past that point by sheer virtue of the fact that you just doesn't matter that you're invincible, you know?
Yeah.
And that was a really new experience for me.
Well, it's like in Sonic, I always thought it was interesting that from Sonic 2 onward, when you could become Super Sonic, that you were invincible, but you could still be crushed to death. Mm-hmm. And as Super Sonic, you go from zero to the maximum possible speed almost instantly. Like, yes. You
gotta go fast.
Yeah, that throttle has full and off, like with no space in between.
As Eddie Izzard once said, there's two speeds, very, very fast and dead.
Yes. So the thing about being supersonic is you still had to kind of be aware of your surroundings, because you didn't want to get crushed to death or fall into a bottomless pit. But the levels were designed in such a way that by the time you were reasonably collecting all the emeralds and being able to run around as supersonic, you could be pretty reckless. Like,
yeah.
You could really enjoy everything just dying if it touched you, right? It felt good to have like that role reversal. In Toy Story, when you become invincible, that recklessness actually, I think, is a hindrance. Because in some of the levels, being able to just recklessly plow forward, you're just like, okay, I'm going to just hold right until the level is over. And then and that's probably maybe like a quarter of the levels tops. And then in the rest of them, it's either timed, so you have to be thoughtful about what you're doing, or there are a lot of bottomless pits for you to fall into, or you have to do like timed whip jumps to like, that's how you ascend. You have to like do multiple whip jumps to ascend up like a rope, particularly in, I think, when you're leaving Sid's room. So there's all these things that are not just difficult, but are difficult to the point of, like, I'd rather just die. I'd rather just die and run out of lives, because then I could put the game down. But instead, I'm stuck here trying to endlessly whip up this rope forever.
Whip it good, dude. Whip it good. And it'd just be like Woody, like standing over me, like, whip it good. I'm like, no, Woody, I don't want to whip anymore. So to put my the one final note I had for visuals, just, and this is, so everything we've said basically is what kind of makes it a broken game. And this to me was just like, eh, just whatever. But I wrote it down anyways, is when you fight boss Buzz in Woody's Nightmare, right?
Yeah, which is the part of the game that most egregiously diverts from the movie. Because the fact that so early in the game, they're like, what if, and follow me, Buzz tried to kill you. And it's like, wait, isn't the main conflict of the story that all of the toys think Woody tried to kill Buzz when he actually didn't? And it's like, yeah, but what if Woody had a nightmare that sort of made his over-aggressive reactions justifiable because he's like freaking out? It's like, no, yeah. If we put that in there, it completely breaks the story. Yeah, but we need an early boss fight.
Yeah, so that's happening. So Boss Buzz, his laser effect was just so...
so lame.
It's so lame, man. That's so terrible. I would have preferred that, like, it's kind of like the go big or go home. I would have either preferred a somewhat decent laser visual, you know, like even if it was like a hit scan, you know, because that's the problem, is that it's a projectile laser, and projectile lasers always look stupid, you know, because lasers aren't projectiles. In fact, even the way we think of lasers, where they basically work, you know, like where you fire it and it just happens, is not true. Because I got to, you know, I saw a video a while back of somebody using an actual heat laser to like destroy an object, like that was like flying.
Ooh.
And basically the object is just flying, and then it's not flying anymore because the light's traveling away from you. What are you going to see? There's nothing to see. But all that being said, you think about lasers as basically being a hit scan weapon where, you know, it's like the person fires it, and if you're just in the direction of the laser, then you get hit. So all I'd have to do is just have like a little glowy thing and then a pzzz, and then you're like, you know, if you were in the way, then you were in the way. It would mechanically be exactly the same. But instead he goes like, and like this little red tic-tac goes floating across the screen, lazily listing down. And you're like, oh, I should probably slowly meander my way away from this laser.
Well, you know, like, you know, what does Woody know about lasers, right? This is his nightmare. He's not a physicist. He's a cowboy, George. He knows nothing of your big city lasers.
So, and no, now my new headcanon, which I've entirely accepted, by the way, which is that at this point, Buzz hasn't used his laser on him yet. He's just made mention of it. And so Woody's just like, well, it's got to be like a rope or something, right? Like, you know, he has just no clue. Not a clue.
No idea. It's basically Buzz's laser is like an arrow flying through molasses. Like, this is Woody is from an era where kids played like cowboys and Indians.
Mm.
And so like that's the born in knowledge that Woody has as a toy, is like how arrows work. So to him, a laser is just like a light arrow.
You know what it is? It's totally a lawn dart, you know, like, you know, when someone just, and it's like, oh, I mean, yeah, that would hurt me if I kept here and staring at it. Oh, God, you know, but like.
So I have two other notes about the visuals, and then we could jump into audio. And unfortunately, there's a really excellent segue from Buzz into the audio. So I'm going to say my notes, and then we're going to pretend like that segue still works.
Sweet.
So in the Pizza Planet level, or in like when you're first sneaking into Pizza Planet, one of the obstacles that I did not figure out how to avoid until like the last possible second, because I was invincible and I was just like, I don't care. It's people walking by, so you only see them from like the waist down. So basically, right, just a giant pair of legs. For reasons, I don't know what they are, but for reasons, they decided to make the legs on the people walking a single flat color and with no points of articulation. So imagine two solid blue like less than signs swooping across the screen to roughly simulate walking. And the reason this is so unacceptable to me is everything else in the game is burdened with an attempt at faux 3D, faux realism, faux trying to make it look as good as Toy Story the movie. Everything is hyper textured, hyper colored, lines flying all over the place, lawn darts coming at you, right? Like, it's just so many lines, so much attempt at texture. And then this giant, totally featureless object that is literally the entire screen. I mean, top to bottom, because it's waist to shoes,
right,
sweeps across the entire screen like half a dozen times over the course of this level. And it's just unbelievably jarring to just see, like, oh my God, everything is so dark and everything is so like muddy in this level because you're in like the dark arcade. And then just here comes the solid wall of blue that hurts me.
Yeah, because if I remember correctly, aren't you in a like a soda
you're
cup?
You're like a soda cup, and Buzz is in like a burger box.
Right, and so like when they're coming, you have to hide.
Yeah, you gotta duck.
Or otherwise, you take damage, not immediately destroying the myth that toys aren't sentient creatures that we've been enslaving and handing to our most violent popular. Yeah, that's fine.
All that. But it's a really bizarre choice to me that someone said, like, somebody was tasked with, like, okay, we're gonna have an enemy in this level that's essentially people walking, and then they're like, well, what do you want them to look like? I don't know, put them in like gray sneakers and like
ship it.
blue pants, just give them blue pants. Yeah, it's really odd, but it's not nearly as odd as the one level that you play as Wolfenstein.
Yes, the Wolfenstein level. What actually was that? I mean, I swear to God, when you play that level, I was like walking around and I was like, I'm going to open up a secret door and there's going to be Mecha Hitler.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously.
Yeah, or a beholder, something. So we will talk about that level again more in mechanics, but the reason I need to just talk about it in visuals is because those graphics are obviously drawn with ray scanning, which means if you thought there was a lot of crazy jagged lines in the other parts of the game, this is like the hold my beer moment. This is like, you think those are jagged lines. You ain't seen jagged lines. And it's not just visually jarring because it is the one and only level that's like that at all. And it is dark and electronic and weird, unlike every other part of the game. But it's also like the graphics fidelity. You feel like your NVIDIA card just broke and your computer has defaulted over to like the onboard VGA only input. And you're just like, why does this game suddenly look like hot garbage?
More hot garbage.
I assume you meant that on the word garbage, not hotter, yes, garbager.
No. Yeah. Hot garbager. Yeah. I think that's the right way to conjugate that.
So the reason the Buzz Lightyear moment was the right moment to segue into audio is because during that fight, he says, "Watch out, and here it comes," 76,000 times.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was funny because at one point, like, because I was playing with the volume a little bit low. And so all of a sudden I was just like playing that one area. And I'm like, is something happening like with the music? Cause this is weird. Cause I'm getting like this like weird. So I turned it up and all of a sudden it was just like, watch out, here it comes. Watch out. And I was like, oh no, that's not part of the music. That's him saying things at such a consistent interval that I assumed it was like, it was bass. You know,
when it's the note for the sound effects in this game is there are a couple and they really liked them because the few bits of speech, like every single time Woody gets hit, which is all the time, he says, ouch. And I don't remember him ever saying ouch in the movie. So there's a good chance that they had to have like Bill from accounting go down to the recording booth, and there's no way they paid Tom Hanks.
You sure? I don't know, man. I mean, like with the amount of money they clearly threw it, I think on Hanks to and do it up.
I mean, they No, they didn't. There's no way. So,
they clearly did not.
But so what I wonder is, like faux 3D was a big deal at this time, I think the faux, like the hyper-compressed faux talking was also like really exciting. And so the tiny little bits of people speaking they were able to get in there, they're like, well, everyone's going to want to hear that a lot because it's so spectacular. And then because you fight Buzz again later when you're like outside the gas station, like that's how you get lost. So you get to hear the whole watch out, here it comes dance an entire subsequent time. And it's exactly like the first time. And then you get to hear it again, because in the last level when like Buzz is flying and he's holding on to Woody, they just decided the way they would warn you, the player, that an obstacle is coming is for him to use the exact same lines of dialogue that he used to threaten to shoot you in the face,
with his lawn dart,
which is a little bit confusing, right? Because it's like, are you threatening me? Like, watch out, I'm going to drop you. Here it comes. I'll see you in hell. Like, what? What is the all of the other 150,000 times I heard you say those lines? Like, you, Buzz, were threatening me. And I understand, it's not lost on me that he is alerting me to a threat. The threat was him, and then later it's the level, because it's like an auto-scrolling level. But I don't need to hear him say, watch out, here it comes, anymore. It's just really, really annoying.
It is. It is. That and the whip sound effect, because... Whoop-ha!
Whoop-ha!
That's not the sound that whips make. No, it's because I think I started to have a slowly over time, like Pavlovian association between that and frustration and failure.
No, that's reasonable.
Because I heard that whip sound effect about a billion times. And the thing is, I should have only heard it a million times. And you talk to any scientist, that that little number after the times 10 to the... that's the one that matters. Yeah. And I swear to God, I was off by orders of magnitude for how many times I had whip stuff. And so the fact eventually where I was like, whip, 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 I'm so sick of hearing this whipping sound.
Yeah. And not making progress. Because like in a Castlevania game, or like a game where you have like a whip weapon, then if you have to hit an enemy multiple times, then you're hearing the whip noise, but you're also associating that noise with progress. But if you're just standing there trying to like whip a little green alien and it's not working, or you're trying to latch onto a thing and it's not working, or you're trying to like make a train not run you over and it's not working, you start to associate the only tool you have with failure and frustration. And that is not good. That is not the feeling they should be trying to engender in the player.
No, again, unless they wanted to make a Cthulhu game, you know, which I'm increasingly, just like the creeping horror of Cthulhu, starting to become concerned that's what they made. One of the things I actually had, because I actually had a note about music. The music was okay. So it was fine, you know, in the sense that it wasn't abrasive. Like, it didn't make me want to take Woody's little string and hang myself. But I did feel that it was dark. I did feel that it was antithetical to the tone that the level was trying to set in many cases. The exemplar of it I can give is the second stage, where basically the music is kind of very relaxed and folksy, similar to what you would think like Woody would have, you know. But the entire purpose of the stage is to very quickly hide all of the toys in a minute and 80 seconds before Andy gets in. And the pacing of the music is not faster than anything else you've heard. In fact, it is faster when you're racing with Buzz, you know? So
yeah, that music, I didn't think about it from that point of view. I think you're right. I don't disagree with you, but the feeling they were going for is way too tied to the visuals and not to the tone, because the feeling of the music in that level is like almost like fair or carnival kind of music. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what you have to do, is you have to like bop them into the toy chest and you have to like knock things out. So it's kind of like, oh, we're playing a fun game. And it's like, but if Andy comes in here and he sees we're out of place, then we die forever. Like, it's not, it's the tone of that level in that scene is very tense. And yet it's not really paired up with the music, but I didn't really get that feeling on other levels though.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, you know, to me, it just hit me really hard. And again, like I don't have a great ear for music, so it may not have been as bad on other levels, but specifically in that level, I remember being, you know, like, oh, especially because the level itself is timed, you know?
Right.
And so I was like, I was getting, feeling the intensity from the fact that I was starting to run low on time, but it didn't build like that, as opposed to, let's just, like, for example, in Super Mario World games, right, where you have that faster, you know, ragtime beat, right, where it's like you have the, you know, slower one where it's like do 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 do, like that, and it has that one that's super fast, you know, for the ones where it's normally you're suspended in the air and it's got a bunch of those little like saw things going around the
like the auto scrolling screen or whatever. Yeah,
exactly.
There's some tension and drama,
right, as opposed to the other ones where it's like, no, there's still stuff to do, but it's not quite as tense like that. I would have liked a faster paced music to pair with the fact that you are absolutely timed.
Yeah, I can kind of feel that. I think so. The music was actually the one thing in this game that I was like, this music's not so bad. Like, It's video game music. Like, it's just pleasant kind of background music. It's not really drawing my attention, but generally speaking, that's what you want. Like, the fact that you notice the music in a Mario or a Zelda or like some of the older Final Fantasies was intentional, because they put a lot of effort into those scores and they really wanted you to hear them. But generally speaking, if you are playing a game or watching a movie or whatever, and you're like intensely aware of the music, it had better be a musical. Like, you shouldn't be that aware of it consciously. It should be like a subconscious, tonal, emotional thing. And the later levels are where they start to diverge in gameplay to support what's happening thematically. So it's like you spend like three levels inside of the claw machine, which is a disproportionate amount of time to give to that, but it's because there's a lot of opportunities for like platformy stuff and to like jump around and explain why the toys are up and moving around and doing things out of the sight of humans. So like, I understand why they did that. And the levels, the length of each level is all over the friggin' map. So yeah. I understand why they had you spend more time there, but those levels also have music that is unlike any music from the movies, because the movies didn't spend a bunch of friggin' time inside the claw machine. So I felt like they actually did a pretty solid job with that music, but it's like, okay, you have like solid, you know, B minus music, and that, looking at your report card here, is your highest grade by a lot.
And like I said, like I didn't think that there was anything wrong with the music, you know, when I listened to it. It wasn't you know, like UN Squadron, where it's just in that particular range that you hear behind your eyes, you know? I just did feel that there were some places where, and you know what, maybe that's part of it, is that because the music wasn't so glaringly bad, I felt that there were some places where, as opposed to the visuals, which are just kind of bad, where I was just kind of like, oh, well, okay, you could have, in my opinion, leveraged this better in different areas, you know, whereas opposed to before, it's like, you can't leverage this because the lever is broken and it's not a lever. It's an old boot filled with urine.
But don't ever fix anything around your house.
No, man, it's great. I've got like 15 boots outside, and that should be all I need in order to, you know, build a new bed for my...
Got a bunch of boots and a bunch of water bottles. I'm ready to fix some stuff.
I am ready to go. And to speak on what you said about like music, is with video game music and with movie music, I think that you're right in the sense that it generally, it's kind of like a food where... It's fine to, you know, have just snack food, because you need food. You need something going on in the background, because if there's no music in the background, that will you know? So it's fine to have kind of junk food music, but at the same point in time, is if it is music that does draw your attention, it had better be like the amazing, you know, Eggs Benedict, like just fantastic, you know, music. A great example of it that I think is great, because I just noticed it recently, is like Avatar The Last Airbender, the show. I mean, like, nobody's going
to
argue.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you have to specify that as if anyone has ever watched that movie a second time.
Yeah, no, because it is important to me that other people understand, like,
you're socially presenting, like, I'm not insane. Like, I don't like the movie, just so we're all clear.
Well, I think that, and this is tangential, because of course it wouldn't be a show unless we got off on a tangent. One of the hardest questions I was ever asked was asked by you, during my bachelor party, which was, which is a worse movie, Avatar The Last Airbender or Dragon Ball Evolution? And like, that was a thinker.
Yeah, that's a tree falling in the woods kind of no right answer question.
But with Avatar specifically, they do a really, really great job of the music's playing in the background. But then right when the plot starts to come to a head, that's when you notice the music all of a sudden. It's been building the whole time, but that's right when the volume gets loud enough that you're like, oh, okay, this is awesome. And so I think that that's kind of where Mario or Zelda land, which is that when that music does crest into your audio range, it's complementing the gameplay so much, so it feels like everything's in harmony. And I felt like this hit a harmonious places sometimes, but again, you know, certainly not the worst thing.
No, and to be fair, you don't really get to spend that much time listening to the music, because you just hear ouch, ouch,
ouch,
ouch, watch out, ouch, ouch, whip it. Yeah, it's just. And I get it. Like I feel like we've tiptoed around this distinction a bunch of times, especially when we played a couple of the bullet hell games. But like, yes, I know that a game has to have sound effects and that they're going to be over the music, just like in a movie, the dialogue is, or the ambient sounds are going to be over the background music. But there is a difference between having sound effects in the auditory foreground and music in the auditory background, and having such terrible and tinny and repetitive sound effects that there might as well not be music, because the only time I hear music is like two or three random moments throughout the level where I happen to stop moving for just a second.
And actually, this kind of speaks to other games that we've played that do this very well, which I, you know, I'm just kind of puzzling out right now, which is, like, let's take, you know, the best game ever made, Link to the Past. like, the sound effects that they do, like, for instance, when Link gets hit, he goes like, ugh, you know? But that's it. But if he went, ouch, every time he got hit, that'd be maddening. Because it would just, you need just enough of something to be like, yes, just in case you like missed it on the screen, despite the fact that it's very clear that you've been hit, you did get hit. So we're just kind of supplementing the visual versus hammering you over the head with the audio saying like, ouch, hey, you know, you got hit, right? It's like, yeah, no, I'm fully aware I got hit by that thing that was halfway across the room. Yeah, because I'm sitting here, I'm flashing, and brace up, because it's not going to be the last time I get hit in the next 10 seconds.
And that's really the force multiplier, right? That's the exponent, is like, oh, you got hit 10 times. That's not that many. Oh, 10 to the 32nd power. Okay, that's a lot. That's a lot of times. Yeah, you got hit a lot of times. And that's where you need to have this inverse relationship. The more you're going to get hit, the less annoying that sound needs to be, right? Because you're going to be hearing it all the goddamn time. And this kind of, I don't know if you have much else to say about the audio, but this kind of, for me, bleeds a little bit into the weird way the cycle time is handled in this game.
Boo cycle time on this game. Boo cycle time in this game particularly.
So, I mean, I have thoughts, but I'm way more interested in what you have to say right now.
Oh my God. This cycle time is like being just put into a blender. It's awful, man. It's so Okay, so we've spoken before about the difference between a difficult game and a punishing game is generally the cycle time, right? You can have a harder and harder game as long as you just continually decrease the cycle time. So taking away the fact that the overarching cycle time is abysmal because the minute you run out of lives, it immediately shunts you back to the beginning of the game, which is Castlevania knew not to do that stuff, you know, because you got infinite continues, you know. And yeah, there's a level select, but you kind of have to cheat to use it. And then if there is a level select, while you have lives at all, but whatever, let's put a pin in that. But the cycle time in each level is like, so the first level, I was like, oh, okay, I get it. All right, this is cool. And in the second level, you know, about a minute and a half cycle time, which is not great, but you know, I mean, there are some Final Fantasy games where you can spend 20 minutes on a battle, you know, so I'm like, all right, that's not too bad. And then you get to the race car level, which is, I think, longer than time itself, I'm pretty sure.
Like, yeah, I mean, there was no time before the race car level or since the race car level. There is only the race car level.
Like there were the Niblonians, then the race car level, then the brain spawn, right?
Yeah,
like
that's it. That's all of time.
But yeah, no, that level lasts forever, and it gets increasingly hard, which is fine. But the thing is that, you know, the first 20 seconds of that level, you can pretty much, after the first time you play it, you can clear it no sweat, and then the next 20 seconds, you can pretty much clear fairly consistently. And then the final 17,000 years is difficult, which is fine. I enjoy the challenge. I don't enjoy having to slog my way back through the rest of the stage every single time to come up to this one new part that I was like, oh, this was interesting. This threw me for a loop. That's fine. But then having to slog my way through the whole stage again and being invincible doesn't help.
No, it doesn't help in any way. And God, there's so many things mechanically wrong with this game. So one of the things that I had originally had this under visuals, and I kicked it to controls and mechanics because the way cycle time happens visually is alarming to me. And I mean,
it just like fades to black.
But it fades very, very suddenly. And the thing is, your hitbox is so big that I am confident if you took like high speed footage of gameplay, the screen starts fading to black before the player could have possibly recognized that they took that last bit of damage that killed them. So there were times where I would be about to die, because I did do a fair bit of playing without the invincibility cheat, but yeah. I would be about to die, and then just all of a sudden it's black, and then by the time I'm like, oh, the screen is black, like it's loaded me back to the beginning of the level, and I was just like, I guess I died.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh,
like
that.
just super. I mean, like, that's what I meant. If there is an afterlife, that's what I assume your first thought is, like, if you got like hit by a bus.
Yes.
Right?
No, it's like, oh, I guess, because you never, you know, like get to theoretically know the thing that kills you, right? You know, so you're just like, oh, I guess that was the thing that did it, which is great, because literally even when death comes for you, you're not even sure what exactly happened. I'm telling you, this is a Cthulhu game, dude.
Yeah.
This is.
Yeah. Every once in a while you start to dabble in the maybe this is a horror game metaphor. And usually I'm like, ah, that's just George being George. He's a funny dude. But this one, you might be onto something. there's a lot of
sanity questioning.
Yeah, tenuous fingernails scratching to hold on to the cliff of sanity, where you're just like, you don't have to fall into the pits of madness because madness is trying to hold on to your sanity.
Well, and it's just it's interesting because, you know, for example, they've spoken, and this is kind of tangential, but like I've seen videos on things like propaganda games, right? Mm. And the thing that makes propaganda games dangerous is the fact that they're not normally unfortunately, I have to use the word good because they are good at being propaganda games, which are horrible,
right?
But the ones that are good at being propaganda games are because they aren't overt, you know, Because if you say like, well, video games make you violent, it's like, no, video games aren't going to make you a killer. So, and I'll go to that really dark place to mention this, because this wouldn't be a horror game, right? If it was truly frustrating, like Home Alone or, you know, Golden Axe, right? Like those games are just Battletoads. Those games are just frustrating. This one's just enough to make you think like, no, this is a real game. This is totally a real game. Maybe you're screwing it up. It's like, am I? No, it's the game. And then you walk out and your wife says, I did it. And you're like, wait, no, but it's hard though. No, you're bad.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's sad that the best metaphor for that is propaganda games, but I think you're right that for something to be truly subversive, whether it's trying to scare you without being obviously scary or trying to make you think or feel a certain way without obviously telling you, like, you know, hey, join the Navy. Like, you don't want to be super liminal.
There it is. Yes. I was hoping.
But it has to inception you, right? And this game crawls into your brain and is like, hey, this is all achievable. You just suck.
It can be done. And the fact that they mechanically hamstring the invincibility option further drives that home, because it's like, hey, man, all of this is doable. It's a game, dude. You can play video games, right? No, here's the thing. We'll even let you be invincible. Still can't beat it, huh? I don't know. Maybe you're bad at this. Like, you're invincible after all. Why are you this frustrated? And you're like, but wait.
No, it does. And the fact that successfully beating a level has the exact same visual as death is not clever, right? It's not good that the way when the screen fades to black, you don't know if you have spontaneously met with success, which some of the levels are like that, where success kind of happens. It's not like you cross an arbitrary finish line, but it's like success happens. Or did I die? And you don't know until you either reload at the beginning of the stage or you see Woody doing his terrifying floppy arms dance on the score screen. Like, it's, I shouldn't ever look at the screen and if the TV paused right then, not be able to say either I won or I died. Like,
yes,
I should know.
Yeah, because I mean, even in the second stage, when you're rescuing all of the toys, the final thing you have to do is jump onto the bed, and you do, and you immediately go ragdoll, which is fine, but it does definitely look like you died, you know. Yeah. And it's like cut to black, and you're like, what the hell just happened? Oh, I won. Oh, good. And then another time you'll be like, all right, I'm gonna jump on this thing, and oh, it's faded to black. Ooh, is this like a cut? Oh, no, wait, I died that time. Wait, what? Yeah, no, it's. Yeah, no, I agree with that sentiment, which is you should never at any point be able to pause the game and not know whether or not you were successful or failed.
Alive or dead. So the person who requested this game, the reason that he specifically requested it was, as I kind of said at the top, like, this game tries to do a lot. Right. So there's about a quarter to a third of the levels are like platforming levels. There's some combat going on. There are a couple of like auto scrolling levels where you just avoid obstacles, but you don't control your rate of, you know, progress through the level.
Yeah.
There's a couple of like top ish down driving levels where you're controlling the RC car. And then there's this weird Doom level where you're Doom guy.
Yeah, you're Doom guy. Yeah. And
why,
actually,
why?
I think the better question is, why not?
Why is that not the whole game? Why is the whole game not just Toy Story painted over Doom?
I might play that game.
Doom was a heavily modded game back in the day. There's no way that doesn't exist.
Yeah. Hey, you know, like, we just gave you all the ways to get in touch with us. So run out of your house and start screaming about Toy Story, the Doom game. So that way we can get in contact with you about that. I think that this game is the definition of it just tries. And that's okay. So I do want to make a difference between this and other shovelware games like that we've played, which is I honestly believe this game, the developers that made it really tried. It really seemed like they tried. The scope of what they attempted to do was so far beyond their budget and maybe abilities.
Oh yeah. None of this feels lazy or malicious. It's the difference between like my high school art student drew something and this, you know, 50-year professional artist who's been at it and has made a living at it drew the same thing. You're going to get different results. Like, and it doesn't mean that the high schooler is bad. It's just when you compare that result to like a Super Mario World, a Legend of Zelda, a Mega Man X, like, yeah, it looks pretty bad by comparison.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, it's not that, you know, like the high school student like had ill intent. They tried their hardest. It's just beyond their skill set. So with that being said, though, you know, yeah, it's just it's like going to, you know, the place where you're like, oh, man, I really want a really good sub. Well, we can go to, you know, like Jimmy John's. We can go to some other place that paid us money to plug them, which I assume happened.
Publix.
Publix. Yeah. Oh, God, I could go for Publix sub right now.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, God. I miss Publix subs.
I would let them sponsor the hell out of this podcast.
Yes. I would let them sponsor us with free Publix subs.
Yeah. No, I would make an entire Publix. If you're listening, go outside of your house.
So with all that being said, though, but if all of a sudden somebody's like, oh, man, dude, there's this other sub place. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, you know, they make subs. Like, yeah, they make subs and wings. So we can get wings, too. Oh, okay, cool. And pizza. Wait.
Mm. Also they, shakes.
Yeah. Mm. Also shakes. Also, they sell boots filled with. But no, at some point you say, like, no, you're trying to do too much. And that's exactly what this is, which is, you know, if you want a platformer, then you want to play a platformer. If you want to play, you know, a side-scrolling, basically bullet hell game equivalent, you know, then play that. This is a little bit of all of those things and none of them well.
No. And I have played games that are like, oh, we're gonna mix it up. There's gonna be all sorts of things going on in here. And it can be done well, but it's very hard because you essentially have to have designers that can design all those different kinds of levels and a game engine that can support all those different kinds of mechanics. And it's hard. Like it's not impossible. It's just really friggin' hard. And this wildly falls short. And I think to your restaurant metaphor, here's what I think of when I think of trying to do too many things. Cause you go into, you know, a very typical American restaurant, and I'm sure they have restaurants like this all over the world, but you think, I'm going to go to a place that has, like, you know, burgers and salads, and maybe you can get, you know, like chicken breast over linguine, like no big deal, just food that's pretty generic. It's pretty hard to screw up. Wait, you guys sell sushi? Like, you never ever get sushi at that place. Like, any place that sells like Pan-American fare and then also sushi, that sushi is definitely like vending machine outside of a truck stop quality.
Yes.
And it's not that a place couldn't make good burgers and good sushi, but you just don't see that very often. Yeah. Like if I was in a 5-star restaurant that was known for its like eclectic menu and everything cost 10 times what it should, I would probably feel like that sushi was pretty safe. But if I'm in a place that has like a $9 chicken sandwich, a $10 hamburger, and a $12 Caesar salad, and then like $7.50 sushi, No.
I mean, it would be very much so like if McDonald's started selling sushi and steak tartare, you'd be like, neither of those two things.
Alarm bells going off. And that's the thing. That's the friend who's like, oh, I want to go out for sushi. And then you pull up in front of Toy Story for the Super Nintendo and you're like, this is not where you go for sushi. Like, I'm happy to go out and get sushi. This just isn't where you go to get it.
Absolutely. And I think that I agree completely with it can be done. I think a great example of one that does it fairly well is ActRaiser.
But totally.
But that being said, even ActRaiser had not amazing platforming, you know?
And it's limited to two things. There's the sim and platforming. There isn't also racing and also, you know, a flower blooming simulator and also... There are two things. And even then, there are obvious paper cuts in both of those experiences.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, I mean, it just... It's like the kid who says, all right, guys, here's the thing, man. I just learned how to juggle. And you're like, oh, okay, good. And they pick up like 17 objects and then just throw them all into the air and it just lands all on their head. And you're like, yeah, that's what was always going to happen.
Yep. Yeah. Everyone is not surprised but you.
And I did have one other comment, which is so on the cheats, right? So there's the invincibility cheat, which I thought was interesting that it was not like a code that you put in, but instead something that you had to go like get, basically.
Yeah, it smacks of my friend who's telling me this at the lunchroom is probably lying to me, but I'm going to try it.
Yeah, no, because when I looked online, it said, okay, so here's the thing. You got to go up to the dresser, right, that has the ball next to it, and you got to kneel down until your star starts spinning. I'm like, you're full of crap, Dan. Like, go home.
You just want to see how long I'll squat on this dresser.
like, look, man, I know that you think your uncle works at Nintendo. He doesn't, okay? I double-checked on that. My mom works with your dad, and your dad's brother does not work at Nintendo, Dan. And no, this is not true. You know, like, it just, I to the point where I actually Googled it, saw that, closed out of that website, went to a different source before I looked like an idiot. And I was like, no, apparently this is the way to do that. And then I did it, even then being like, nah, you're punking me. It's a Cthulhu game. And so then so then after that, there's also the level select, which I like that there's a level select. But even that was done in a way that I think is just like a final screw you to the audience of like, oh, you don't want to play all of our game? Well, you know what? You can't just press a button and pull up a level select screen. You have to, in every level, hit pause, hit select, and then watch Woody get, you know, happier than a pig in poop about the fact that you got 0 stars on that level. And then stare at you like unimpressed for a solid 2 seconds and what feels like forever until the next level gets pulled up, and then you're like, pause, do it again. He's like, woohoo, look at all of your failure again. And then you pause it, and then it actually does take time to slog through the level select, which I was just kind of like, I mean, all right, it's better than not being able to move forward at all because I lack the skill or abilities to do it despite the fact that I'm invincible. But even this is kind of a mess.
Well, it's really a level skip, right?
Yes.
Like, because this is kind of like if you ever listen to an actual record being played, you can absolutely pick the needle up and move it over and put it back down, but it's not a precision instrument, right? It's not, you wouldn't say like, oh, believe me, the high note she hits 45 seconds into the song, you need to hear it. Like, you would never jump to 45 seconds. You would just go to the obvious beginning of the song, and that's all the precision you have, right? Like, it's like, oh, I live off a main street, plus or minus a state. Like it's just, it's not very accurate, and it's unidirectional, and it's linear only. You can't jump ahead 2 levels or 4 levels. You can go exactly one at a time. It's you know what it is? It's the next on like an iPod or on a CD player. Like, yes, you can go ahead and you can't double press it. Like, it's, you can go ahead one song and that's it. Yep.
And to me, like, I could even kind of deal with that if it wasn't for the fact that, like you said, you press the next button and it loads for a second, and then just Woody's
he's so excited.
Well, I mean,
and
that's
he
the
just
thing, but then he,
cannot
like,
hide it.
Yeah. but he's like, just like he gets so jazzed, but then he like stares and looks at you at the end, right? Yeah. And so normally when it's happening, like, and you got some stars, it's like, yeah, man, you got some stars, you do you. And now it's just kind of like, yeah, man, you got some stars, oh. And then it just smashes to the next scene where all of a sudden that blank look, like the tone is completely different, you know? Like I'm slowly descending into madness.
So speaking of that scene transition, I would like to take a moment to apologize to the American people and my family and to you. How in God's name did we not talk about the text in between? Because yes. Someone somewhere surely thought that you were supposed to read that. But one, this is a children's game. And I'm not saying that young children can't read, because definitely the target age for this game, I think, would be able to read this kind of text. But it's blocky. There is no delineation between speech and descriptive text. There's no delineation between who is speaking. So you just have this wall of jagged letters that you have to try and decipher like freaking cuneiform in between every level. And I'm just like, and they actually give you the option to turn off the story. And I don't think that's because people were like, oh man, I really want to sit down and play Toy Story. That's a fun romp, but I don't need to see all the story again because I already know all the story. I think this is almost like an accessibility thing where they were like, if we put all this jagged text on the screen, eventually there's going to be murders. So we need to give people the ability to turn this assault on their corneas off.
Well, and also I think that, first of all, yes to all of that. It was just that was all terrible. But also the fact that the instructions and win condition for each level are delivered in text in a game, that is not acceptable in a movie.
No.
And movies are not interactive experiences. Like, it's just the fact that, you know, the first time, because, I mean, you know, obviously we're doing this for a podcast. So the first time I, like, went through and, you know, read everything, and I was like, oh, God, this is a slog. And then at one point I was just like, I'm curious. So I think it was the racing level the first time I did it. I slammed past the instructions on purpose to see if I could even puzzle it out without the instructions. Mm. And it took some doing to realize that, like, because you hit Buzz and he, like, drops this thing, whatever it is, and you're like, you pick it up. But the fact that your power is time-based, not effort-based, is, like, super weird.
Yeah.
And so the text is pretty necessary, you know? And so, yeah, if you either can't read or don't read English or don't have a strong enough ability to read where you can or care to, because I mean, I'm 32 and I'm pretty highly literate and I didn't want to read all that stuff.
Well, it's not easy to read and it's not pleasant to read. Like, it's not interesting and the levels are, this is why it just feels like they're not trying to be malicious. This isn't a lazy cash grab. This is just like, this was the best these designers can do, because most of the levels are go right, you know, go right to progress. But then the second level breaks that convention. You have to backtrack a ton to successfully put all the toys away and to move the obstacles. And if you don't read the text that your objective is to put the toys away, you saw a bunch of toys in the first level that mostly either were harmless or tried to kill you, and now your goal has completely changed. And if you don't read that text, it is not in any way made obvious to you through the gameplay, except there's the little tiny Etch-a-Sketch up in the top corner that is supposed to be like your hot-cold indicator or like your beacon for what's to do next. It is not clear enough. It does not convey anywhere near enough information. You need to read that text.
Yes, absolutely. So, with all that being said, did it hold up?
No, but asterisk? So, here's my problem. This game has just enough interesting stuff going on that I would tell someone, if you played this as a kid, try it again with the, like, don't even try to beat it, just like go directly to how you get the invincibility thing and just push your head through those bricks until you come out on the other side of the wall. just to see what it's like as an adult compared to the way you remember it as a kid. Because when I first fired up the game, I was like, oh my God, these graphics are horrible. But then the second I was Woody and I was like jumping, I was like, oh, Toy Story. Like, I remember playing this as a kid. I love this movie. Yeah. Like, totally. I remember, you know, renting. This is another game I had to rent. I was like, I totally remember renting this game. Like, I love Toy Story. And the further I progressed through the game, the more I started to lose my grip on reality, because I was like, I all of this is familiar. I'm 100% positive that I've beaten this game, but there's no way I was good enough to beat this game. So I guess I must have cheated my way through, but I don't remember cheating my way through. Like, it was just a very weird kind of almost like an out of body experience. Like, I feel like I have someone else's memories, like the memories of someone who is weirdly good at terrible platformers.
Like you've been driven mildly insane.
Yeah. So so I think I'm going to have to give this like a really half-assed, like, it's a nostalgia monocle, but like with a big crack in it.
Nice. Like, for me, I would say, yeah, I think this is a good game to play. Like I said, because this is the first example I can point to where I can say, you want a game that's super fair, you know, this one. Check this one out. See how frustrating it is to have a game that is, like, religiously fair.
But never in the player's favor. Like, the world has very consistent rules, but it's a world that hates you.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's that. I mean, but aside from that, you know, if you're looking to, again, like, I think this would be a good one for like game developers, where it's like, if you want to see what happens when you get a bloated scope, you know, like this is what happens, you know, like start with what your gameplay can show or what your visuals can show, because if your visuals can't show, you know, like you're, oh yeah, I want Buzz to look exactly like Buzz, but your visuals can't accomplish that, then don't do it, because it does make you feel like you're slowly but surely losing your mind. And I'm reminded of a line: we live on a placid island of ignorance and in the midst of black seas of infinity, and it was not meant that we should voyage this far.
The curtain falls, the music plays, the credits roll, then it all fades to black. And you're left by yourself. The fanfare is gone. There's no player two there by your side to share victories won. But as you slowly progress down the hall to your bed, a few great events leak back into your head. From the time that you spent traversing the land, battling evil, fighting the darkness, just sword in hand. Your memories creeping with the edge of a smile. You realize again what you've lost for a while. You're gonna think back much less.